The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome again to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. Of course, I am your host, John Schmidt. And again today, as I do every week, I'll be taking you out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures, those, as we call them, rich with the essence of constant renewal. Well, it is a pleasure again to be back. And without sounding like a broken record, I have to yet say one more time, it is a radiant day here on the Gulf of Mexico. The reflection of the blue sky this time of year, the fall, and the nature of the combination of what we have in weather here and other parts, I'm sure, of the U.S. and abroad, it is just lovely. The winds are steady here. They're bringing a freshness to it, and I hope that parallels our conversation today. I'm delighted with our guest and excited to get going. Little introduction, though, to this week. Those of you that are regular listeners, you know last week I did a piece on breakthroughs in the news, looking at some of the potential surfacing around the globe in some very interesting ways. Today we want to continue our focus on breakthroughs yet again, but today with a more specific orientation to breakthroughs and those needed and those occurring in some interesting cities, but focused mostly on breakthroughs in our cities and communities. And I ask the question, what do the likes of San Antonio, Silicon Valley, Portland, Denver, Delaware, Southwest Florida, what do these have in common? And I think those are some of the backdrop or the underlying question to our show. That's sort of an underpinning and an orientation to our focus today, which is on sustainable economic development. That is a part of our continuing conversation. And recall, we kicked this off, I guess, really over a year ago now, June last year, with Jeb Brookman. And if you recall back, talked about his acclaimed book, Welcome to the Urban Revolution, How Cities Are Changing the World. And in that conversation with Jeb, a number of elements came out, but one essential dimension, and I think, and need was pointed to, and that is for every city or community to be clear about its economic through line, its economic logic, as Jeb is calling it, or as our Danish friends would say, the economic red thread that underpins a city in its growth and development. And I would add to that, I would say, especially in this coming world of great change and extraordinary transition. So we've built upon that show a number of ways. Many of you know, including an introduction with Rob Hopkins to the transition communities, both in Europe and the U.S., each of which is focusing on more of a civil society effort toward a post-carbon, post-cheap peak oil world, emphasis on resilience, emphasis on relocalization. And today, though, we want to explore breakthroughs, perhaps more in the mainstream even, that include the cities I've mentioned and more, which have been focusing on new sustainable economic development strategies. And to do that today, I am absolutely delighted. My guest is Dr. Mark Weiss, the chairman and CEO of Global Urban Development, the organization that has partnered with the communities that I've pointed to. As a way of introducing Mark, some specifics, he's chair of the Climate Prosperity Alliance and executive editor as well of the Global Urban Development Magazine. He's a member of the steering committees of the UN Sustainable Development Knowledge Partnership and UN World Urban Campaign and Best Practices and Policies Program. He's author and co-author of a number of books and articles, and I have read some of them. He does great work, one of which in particular, The Rise, and I think it's acclaimed, The Rise and of the Community Builders. And he has a best-selling international textbook, Real Estate Development Principles and Process. He's consultant on sustainable economic and community development in the U.S. across the world, so our listeners around the world will take heart and be heartened with that. He's worked in South Africa, China, Brazil, Spain, Sweden, Czech Republic, and Virgin Islands. The bio goes on and on. I can talk a lot more, but I will just say that I hosted Mark and two of his extraordinary colleagues in my home just a few weeks ago. Had a great conversation about global urban development. We had a great conversation also about the work these gentlemen have done in transitioning land ownership in Russia. That was a stimulus for part of our conversation. Mark, great to have you on the show. Really a delight.
Thanks so much, John. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, let me get started. I know some of our folks don't know so much, and instead of me doing the introduction on global urban development and maybe a little bit more about you, why don't you start off and give us a sense of the organization, what it's been up to, sort of the scale and scope and reach, because I think it's a compelling story.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Global Urban Development was founded in 2001 and actually was an outgrowth of earlier work. I had been a what's called a public policy scholar at the Woodrow Wilson Center, and we were doing a publication called Global Outlook that was funded by the federal government about kind of urban policy all over the world. And it was in the process of that that I got to travel a lot and learn a lot. And when that publication wasn't continued, by that point we had built up such a network that we got the idea to launch a new organization, and it was closely tied to the millennium in the world and the United Nations in two senses. One, because the UN had at that point projected that for the first time in all of human history, the majority of the world is now becoming urbanized. Never happened ever before, and yet now today, majority of the 7 billion people in the world live in cities and towns. And if you think of the scale of the change, in 1950, when I was born, there was the world was one third urbanized, and there was about 2 billion people. Now we're half urbanized out of 7 billion people. And by 2050, the world will be two-thirds urbanized with 9 billion people. So from 600 million urbanized people when I was born in 1950 to 6 billion a century later, it's an extraordinary shift.
That is a big shift, Mark, and I think that's what we've been talking about here in the context of urban and urban life and urban growth and development. But say some more about that in terms of, with that sort of as a backdrop, the build-up, the launch of the organization.
So that was the first kind of occasion, you know, that we saw that the world was becoming urbanized everywhere. It actually already has been for some time in North and South America and in Europe, but now everywhere becoming mostly urbanized. And yet the world still has a kind of an anti-urban mentality. You know, that in other words, the urban life, big cities, wherever, is the problem. And basically what we came out and said, and we worked with National Geographic on this, is said, well, it's also the solution to the problem. In other words, if we're going to solve this problem, we have to embrace, you're not going to stop this urbanization, we have to embrace it and find a way to make it work for everyone as an economic, social, and environmental resource, both for the urban and for the rural areas. So that was really our first major argument, the rationale for why to create global urban development, is that we were, in the sense of the sweep of the future, we were not against it. We were in favor of having it work for everyone.
And it worked for everyone then in terms of part of the focus I know we were talking about here then. I know it's multifaceted, but one dimension of it is sustainable economic development. And maybe you can say something about what you mean by that. I know we've been talking about it here in some other in a number of ways, but maybe get clear first about your orientation to that, Mark.
Okay. Well, just to say that the, maybe a pinch more on global urban development, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
That it evolved out of these three core ideas. I said the first one, the essentially pro-urban, but really pro-everyone in every place. The second was a belief and a recognition, I think, on our part that people all over the world have much more in common than the differences between them. Yes, the differences are important and even to be celebrated, but the commonality of human beings in everywhere, in every place, in every community, every culture, is much more profound. And so the second thing about global development is we said we are truly global. We're truly pro-global, not necessarily quote-unquote globalization, but that it's a worldwide organization that we're approaching things as citizens of the world that really represent that perspective. So that was, and we bring together the developing countries and the United States, which sometimes treats itself like it's its own country. We bring all these three worlds together into one conversation that we can all learn from each other and help each other, benefit from each other, and so forth. So that was the second principle. And then the third was win-win solutions. So we look at kind of public-private partnership-oriented, very inclusive public policy with, citizens, civil society, everyone being involved, and in ways in which makes people better off without making others worse off. It's not a us versus them. As we say in global urban development, we don't do us versus them because there's no them. It's all us.
Got it. And so you've got your global in scope. You've got the principles you've oriented here too. And so people have a sense of where you're coming from, Mark. Is an organization nonprofit or profit oriented in focus?
It's a nonprofit.
Yeah.
We really are a save the world group, but we're essentially we started out in Prague, London, Washington, and building this global network, and eventually became, there's about 500 people who are leaders and experts from all over the world in every continent, major continent, in many countries, in all walks of life. Some of them are famous, like, Muhammad Yunus, who won the Nobel Peace Prize, and some are local elected officials or whoever it may be. But it's an extraordinary network, and it's really my privilege to be part of this network.
Well, it's wonderful then. That's a larger context, and maybe I was hurrying us a little bit into economic development, but I think it's one to really hold the larger context here in terms of the magnitude of the effort and the mix of people that are involved and what's going on. I know we're coming up on a break here, Mark, but I would like to use that as the foundation and talk some more about sustainable economic development. I've pointed to some of the cities and the tangibility of that. I don't want to get too quickly down on the dance floor, keep it up on the balcony. Maybe we can sort of go balcony and dance floor and be reflexive in that. But let's take a short break here, Mark.
Okay,
I hear the music coming in on the ears here. Listeners will be taking a short break to get a glass of water, get a drink, come back. We'll take a break. Mark Weiss with us today, global urban development. We're talking about what we can see in breakthroughs in strategies in our communities. Come back in a moment. Thanks.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8880. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind. There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Classes in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network.
It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, welcome back on this Monday in October. Stunning fall here in many, many parts of the world. My guest today, Dr. Mark Weiss. He's the chairman and CEO of Global Urban Development. Our focus is on some of the breakthroughs, some of the leading edge of sustainable economic development, the strategies that really are related to them. Mark, I was really trying to pull us down to the dance floor, maybe too quick here. I think your opening was providing even much more rich context than I was allowing. Maybe you can build off that, though, in terms of the focus of the work and the rich community of people that you have around the world really engaged in trying to provide such positive impact.
Okay, well, Global Urban Development, we evolved these values-based themes, treating people and communities as assets, facing the environmental challenge, building gender equality, improving global health, and so forth. And so in the early days, we worked on, we worked with the United Nations on the urban dimensions of the Millennium Development Goals that also came at our birth. We worked with the European Commission on the expansion of the European Union into Eastern Europe and the urban development impacts of that. We created Global Urban Development magazine. We did issues in partnership with the World Bank and Ashoka. And one of our core themes was metropolitan economic strategy that had grown out of work that I and many of my colleagues had done. We came out of this world of high technology oriented, kind of cutting edge urban and regional economic development. And so we had a paradigm we called metropolitan economic strategy. We looked at it as the entire urban region as kind of one economic unit, if everyone could work together to have a proactive, you know, competitive strategy to grow businesses, jobs, and incomes. And in that framework, we argued that it was vital, environmental sustainability was a vital part of your economic strategy, as was equity, you know, social equity and inclusiveness. So we have that all in place. In fact, we even worked with the Central Bohemia region in the Czech Republic and in South Africa and many other places on metropolitan economic strategy. In 2007, when the fourth assessment report of the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change came out, I got very involved, really for the first time ever, on climate change, and so the Committee on Facing Environmental Challenge kind of took that up, and that was when we decided to make this shift and sort of take METPON economic strategy, put together with the issue of climate change, and develop a specific model of sustainable economic development, in which sustainability is the centerpiece of the economic strategy, or as we say, you get richer by becoming greener.
Got it. And so then you've begun to work, as I was mentioning, some of these communities, cities, even more broad than just cities in some areas. And those were ones, organizations, communities, Mark, that had some inclination to move in this direction. How did where did it come from in terms of the work?
There was the demand side model and the supply side model. In the case of San Antonio, Texas, the mayor had this initiative, which ultimately came to be called, now there's really two mayors involved, there was Mayor Hardbarker and his successor, Mayor Castro, called Mission Verde, which was a very forward-looking economic development strategy oriented around energy efficiency, resource efficiency in terms of water, renewable energy production, and so forth. And James Nixon, who's the president of Global Development, was a lead consultant in that effort. So that one was came from the grassroots, and we just had the good fortune of having the opportunity to be involved in it. In other cases, when we were developing what we called the Climate Prosperity Initiative, and there we had the support of the Rockefeller Brothers Fund and the Environmental Defense Fund, we actually reached out to places to encourage them to use this model we had developed, which we call green savings, green opportunities, green talent. And I'll describe more in a moment what that is. But so in the case of Silicon Valley, we reached out to them, and an organization called Joint Venture Silicon Valley then decided to do a climate prosperity strategy. And now there's a Climate Prosperity Council of business government leadership that's overseeing implementation of that strategy. And that was similar in Portland, metropolitan Portland, Oregon, and Washington. We reached out to them in metropolitan Denver, in the state of Delaware. In the case of Southwest Florida, also they came to us.
And so it sounds like there's a mixed kind of perspective here. Some pull, some sort of introduce and go to, sort of the supply and demand you're talking to. But it's interesting, Mark, what would you say then in terms of what runs across, what are the threads that run across the communities that were really engaging in this? You began to describe that some, and I'm hearing part of this in terms of your strategy as well, that there's something about the connecting to the business logic of it. But say some more. What does connect
right
this here?
And I think your audience in particular will be very familiar with the business sustainability ideas, like natural capitalism, that Paul Hawken and Amory and Hunter Lovins did, or cradle to cradle that Bill McDonough and Michael Bongard, or Peter Senge at MIT, or the natural step that came out of Sweden, that all these ideas that are being applied by many corporations today, you know, whether it would be IBM or Nike or GE or Toyota or what have you. My favorite example, I think the single best example, is Interface Corporation, industrial tile carpet manufacturer and installer in Atlanta, Georgia, where the president or the CEO of the company, Ray Anderson, 15 years ago, he read Paul Hawken's book, Ecology of Commerce, and touched his heart, and he decided that, you know, they were a totally legally in compliance with all environmental laws and regulations, but he wanted to be much more in harmony with the earth, you know, have the company be much more sustainable in terms of reducing their toxic footprint, being less wasteful of resources, producing more from renewable resources, et cetera. And over 15 years in this book that just came out, I love this book, called Confessions of a Radical Industrialist, Ray Anderson shows that Interface not only got much more eco-friendly, they saved millions, they came up with new, more eco-friendly products, their revenues went way up, their market share and their good image and name went way up, their profits went up. So everything in the cycle worked. And so we break that down into green savings, what you do to become more sustainable saves you money by being more resource efficient. Secondly, green opportunities, what you do to become more sustainable, you're actually generating new opportunities for business, job, and income growth. And third, green talent, you're by becoming more sustainable, you're investing in the more competitive entrepreneurial and workforce skills of tomorrow. So we took that model and we said, if it works for companies, it will work just as well for communities. If it works for business development, it will work just as well for economic development. So it'd be, as I once said to Ray Anderson, what you did for Interface, we could do for Atlanta. Now, we haven't done it for Atlanta yet, but we did find places that wanted to do exactly this.
Yeah, I got it, Mark. And I do know Ray, and I know his organization well. Having lived in Atlanta, I've done some work, and Aviston's done some work with them in years past. So we certainly appreciate that. Interesting, though, what you've done is to take the business side of it, which takes, in the language we've talked about here on Zoom, the strive-drive, business, goal-oriented, economic driver side of it, and really said, what's the logic in this and how to translate that into communities? It's an interesting interplay here. Can you say a little bit for our listeners then about how that translates into a San Antonio or to a Silicon Valley? What's a good example about how that might play out and come to life in the places where these communities are embracing that in a positive way?
Well, I'll give you the kind of the economic logic of it as we apply it. It starts with green savings. In other words, finding ways to enable businesses and households to become more energy efficient, more resource efficient in terms of other resources, and then to reuse more of the waste stream and so forth. All of that actually saves businesses and households money. You know, California, through energy efficiency standards on new buildings, new appliances, and new vehicles, primarily, there were other factors that were also contributed, over three decades saved people in the state $56 billion. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a lot. And
yes.
So the first thing is that the green savings actually improves the bottom line of businesses. It adds to disposable income of households. That's all adds to general demand. But as well, it also adds to specific demand for the green opportunities. In other words, the new goods and services that are being provided in order to be able to achieve that efficiency. And so it's a virtuous cycle. Mm-hmm. Where, as you save, you're also generating more demand. For example, again, on this California model, they also then said, well, where did the $56 billion go? A lot of it went back in the state's economy rather than purchase oil for the Middle East. That created 1.5 million jobs. So that's the sustainability becomes the driver.
Good, Mark. Let me just pause there for a moment. I heard the music in our ears here, but that's the first sort of platform of the three pieces here, the savings. And I'll also suggest that this has some similarities of what we've talked about to sort of a gearing up process that I'll describe when we come back. But let's take a break and let's pick it up and let's get some clarity about the different dimensions here and then how it's played out in the cities. San Antonio, Silicon Valley, Southwest Florida, Delaware. We've got a number of examples in play. Let's do it. Let's take a short break here, folks. Come back in a minute. Join Mark and I. Thanks.
Stop.
stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
It's football, pop culture, and everything in between. Get ready for The Game Plan with Anthony Herron, a.k.a. Big Ant. Anthony has a background in college and professional football and brings the player, coach, and broadcaster perspective to this weekly roundup of the top sports news and events. Big Ant wants to hear from you, too. Tune in to The Game Plan with Anthony Herron every Tuesday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. It's game time.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back today, continuing with Mark Weiss, our focus and conversation about sustainable economic development. Mark, I was saying when we were going on break, we've had some limited conversation, but what you've established here is the parallels to business, and we've used the analogy and almost the model in some of our conversations in business about how it's a very much of a gearing up process. The lower gears are about engaging from something, from nothing to something. Most office benefited first and gets the attention through the cost side of the awareness. It moves from there into much more of a connecting, saying, well, we can't do it ourselves. We have to connect with others, and the partnering begins, and we start to make some benefits, and ultimately we begin to recognize in business that there's a fundamental market gain, and there's a fundamental business advantage to be gained from this. And it sounds like that's what you're really parlaying over into the realm of the communities and where you've been going. Does that sound similar?
Yes. In fact, we came, you know, I'll tell you, I once, I'm just remembering this story. I went to a meeting on Wall Street, this was all the way back in 2007, on renewable energy and clean technologies. And they had these CEOs of these small to medium-sized but rapidly growing companies from all over the world, Germany, China, everywhere. They came to New York basically to pitch for capital. You know, and the audience were, you know, investment bankers and, commercial bankers and ratings agencies and financial journalists and, you know, bond and stock traders and on and on and on. And, you know, as I was sitting there, I thought, well, you know, we have the ability to make this transition from resource wasting capitalism, which is what we have now, where we overuse and waste resources massively, and over abuse and exploit nature, to a resource saving capitalism, where we conserve and reuse resources massively and work in harmony and balance with the cycles of nature, a kind of a biomimicry approach. And if we do that, we're actually going to be not only healthier and have a better environment, higher quality of life, we're going to be better off economically. Because if we have higher resource efficiency and energy productivity, to use McKinsey terms, that's going to lead to a more prosperity for more people in more places everywhere, not less. And so that's really the underlying philosophy, I guess, behind what we're trying to do in terms of place-based, area-wide economic development strategies for towns, cities, counties, regions, states, provinces in the U.S. and around the world.
Well, I like it, and I like the language you're using there. I like the place-based language and the description of what you're doing in terms of the nature of capitalism. But, Mark, you're actually doing something here, too, that doesn't just provide sort of a generic one-size-fits-all, just the world needs to go do this. As I understand it in our conversations, you're really tailoring this to the uniqueness of the communities, the uniqueness of the place, and building upon the savings, but also flourishing then a sense of the life and fabric and the through line and the economic thread of the community as itself while it's developing. Can you say a little bit more about that? Because I think that's pretty distinctive.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, and I preach this, like I said, I've been an economic development expert since the 70s, and one of my core things I always preach is be yourself, which I can tell you for example, when I was doing training in South Africa, and they were so used to the International Monetary Fund swooping and saying, this is the way you have to do it, that just to tell them that it was okay for them to be themselves was a very welcome message. But anyway, I've always argued that the two most important things you have to do is invest in the fundamental assets that make your place special and attractive and competitive, and then grow the dynamic industry networks that flow from those fundamental assets. So by definition, every economic development strategy is custom designed, tailor-made for that particular place and its unique characteristics among the place itself and the population that lives and works and plays and visits there. So that's what we do. So in the model of green savings, green opportunities, and green talent, that can be applied everywhere, but how you achieve green savings will vary from place to place, including even what are the resources that you most need to focus on. There are some places where water is a huge issue and others, not as much, or the same with energy or any other resource, even human resources. But the green talent will vary from place to place because that's based on who the people you have. For example, in Southwest Florida, we're looking at a relatively unique strategy of focusing on baby boomers and up, 50 to 80-year-old, semi-retired, second and third career people as the biggest single asset that they have in terms of green talent, in terms of having a dynamic entrepreneurial workforce. So that's usually everybody's focusing on the young ones, the 20 and 30 years old. So, but we're doing a strategy there that fits with that place, you see. And but the place where you have the most variation is on the green opportunities, where we do what we call the clean tech cluster, growing the new businesses that will thrive in this new green economy. The sustainable world. And that definitely varies from place to place. As I like to say, in Delaware, we're focusing on marine energy. In Colorado, they're not focusing on it.
Absolutely, yeah. And so what would they be really focusing on in Colorado? Energy itself?
Well, yeah, I guess solar is, you know, and wind, but yeah. So, you know, your resource base will determine, you know, what in the clean tech cluster, you know, when we do a very serious, detailed analysis, you know, what are the businesses that have the best chance of growing here in this place, you know, and that was one of the things I learned from the whole technology thing, where every place. I served as the deputy director. It was called the California Commission on Industrial Innovation, which was the first high technology economic development initiative in America. And, you know, watch all these places try and over again say, well, this is the magic formula. Well, no, it isn't. You know, what makes your place special is the magic formula.
Yeah, that's right, Mark. And it strikes me from what I've seen in different communities, some communities, sophisticated communities, have an established economic development policy. A few others have an established sort of a green orientation policy, but there are very few that have connected the dots on both of them and how that actually can be put together. That's my experience. But is that some of what you're seeing? You're connecting the dots here in some unique ways.
Yes, it's very exciting. And one of the things that's fascinating is wherever we do this work, that you have the economic and business development people on the one hand, and you have on the other hand the environmental sustainability people, renewable energy people, and so forth on the other hand, and generally they don't talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that's really beautiful is we get the, you know, we get the economic development director and the environmental services director in the same room together, talking about the same thing and working together toward the same goal. And to me, that's part of the beauty of it.
Well, this is part of my introduction. I was mentioning the economic through line, the economic red thread, the economic driver, and the economic logic. And then you've got organizations like Transitions, Transition Communities, and so forth, but really trying to pull those together so that we're not talking about separate things. You're talking about connecting the dots on this, and I've got to imagine there's a side of implementation to this too, Mark, that really brings a widespread collaborative effort of business and social entrepreneurship to bring this alive.
Yes.
I mean, does that make sense?
And one of the biggest groups, you know, these green entrepreneurs. And by the way, we have a definition where, you know, we say a clean tech business is one in which its actual business itself, in other words, the product it sells, the good or service it sells, is directly related to, you know, broadly defined to kind of, you know, improving the environment. But any business can be a green business, as Ray Anderson proved, regardless of what you produce, because you become green by how you produce it. And if the goods you produce or the service you deliver, if you do that in a way that's more eco-friendly, then that makes you a green business, and that saves you money, and you know, and so forth. And so what we find is this sort of this blending of the clean tech business, the green businesses. The people that are involved in that are kind of part of the leadership at the grassroots level everywhere of this, because they have both the kind of the energy and drive and social vision. And yes, in some way it benefits their business, and that's a good thing. But it's also, I think, comes out of a larger passion and caring that people feel that got them into that business or that way of doing business in the first place.
And so, Mark, the communities we're talking about, San Antonio, Silicon Valley, Delaware, Florida, and so forth, I've got to imagine then there's a piece of this that starts with the government. There's a piece of this that's oriented to creating that strategy, and then it's implemented by connecting the dots across the community. I hear the music in our ears. When we come back, I'd love to hear a little bit more about where that's actually connecting the dots and what's actually happening and some of the examples of that. And then with time, I've got a couple other areas I'd love to take off with you on here. But let's take a short break, Mark. Before we come back, closing session, Mark Weiss, Global Urban Development, what's actually happening, the sustainable economic development strategies, the through line for growth, the through line we cannot avoid and ignore. Take a break. Come back in a moment. Thanks.
up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
The Marsh Engel Show. Join the movement to empower yourself with the essentials of feminine power and success, and learn how women around the world are becoming more inspired, more influential, and absolutely amazing. Each week, Marsh sits down for an engaging conversation with women who are boldly committed to living their most amazing life. You'll discover ways to step into your greatest vision, deepen your relationships, and unleash your real creative brilliance. Get ready. It's time to jump into the conversation. That's Monday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern for the Marsh Engel Show on the Voice America Business Network.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back today, last segment, Dr. Mark Weiss, Global Urban Development. We are talking about breakthroughs in sustainable economic development. One quick thing, Mark, as people want to follow up and be able to tune into your website, it is globalurban.org. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay,
and you can
good.
Click
yeah,
on
resource there.
Climate Prosperity is one link. Generating Sustainable Economic Development is another link, and then publications. And we have many, many things that you can download as PDF files and print out no charge, including Global Urban Development Magazine.
Yeah, great. It's a good resource. I wanted to make sure we get that. But, Mark, as we're pulling it together in this segment, I know part of our conversation on Zoomed has been about the fragmentation, good people doing good work in our communities, committed to green, committed to clean tech, committed to local ag, committed to how do you transition from energy, but it doesn't always get connected. In fact, a few times does it get connected well into the mainstream in terms of the public infrastructure, in terms of the governmental realm, in terms of business being aligned. How does that actually happen, and where have you done that? It might be a good watchword for us and had a breakthrough on that.
Well, I'll give you the big picture second, but I'd like to start from the grassroots up, because this is where the rubber meets the road. I had this recent wonderful visit to in Southwest Florida, a homeowners association, where these two crusty old guys, both of whom were retired engineers, neither of whom were particularly green, but they had these gas-powered street lamps that were a kind of a charming feature of this upper middle-income subdivision, and they were on all the time, and the gas bill just kept going up and up, and then one of them fell, and then it broke and started a small fire. So they're trying to figure out what to do about these gas lamps, and what they ended up doing was they converted them to LED lighting with these kind of reflectors above them, and solar panels on the same charming gas lamps, and so they're now solar powered, and they saved an incredible amount of money, like thousands and thousands of dollars. So much so that they don't have to raise the association fees to do the repaving of the streets. And then they got the bug. They said, "Wow, we saved a lot of money." So that's green savings, right? So then they got a. Turns out they have a big kind of pool of water, which even has alligators in it. But they figured out how to pump the hot water up from there to this kind of geothermal heat pump to heat their swimming pool, the community swimming pool. So now they saved a ton of money in that. So they're ecstatic about that, and all the homeowners are happy about that. So basically what we're looking at is, well, who did you buy the goods and services from? You see? So as part of the economic development strategy, those should be local suppliers. And see, then you've really got something going. You've got all these homeowner associations and all the money they can save and all the new goods and services they would be purchasing in order to save all that money, and all those could be local businesses, and that means local jobs, and you've got an incredible virtuous cycle going just from that one small grassroots example.
Well, but that's a great example as well, Mark, because you start close to home and you get people that may not be aware, and so many people still aren't really attuned to this, perhaps as well as they might be. You get them where they are and you get them something real impact, you get a win, you get a success, you see the green savings right there, you're able to build upon that and you start to connect the dots. That's interesting. I'm wondering if you've got a perspective as well.
Yeah, well, I'll give you an example of one that I live in Delaware. We had a huge successful push for offshore wind energy project called Blue Water Wind off Rehoboth Beach. It'll be the largest in North America when it's built. And out of that whole movement, where we argued not only was that, you know, good for energy independence, for reducing greenhouse gas emissions, for being able to close these coal plants, which cause so much pollution and cancer, but most importantly, it would be a great job generator, and Delaware could be on the cutting edge of this offshore wind technology. And so that became the impetus for the Governor Markell to do a whole full-blown strategy to actually bring in a green, sustainable economic development guy to be the head of the Department of Environment, in recognition of this kind of bridging the two and having him be the coordinator. And so it had a very simple model. The green savings was focusing on using the federal stimulus funds and other federal funds, as well as there's a regional greenhouse gas emission initiative with GREGI, where states have a small cap and trade system on utilities that generates some revenue. So Delaware put all that into promoting energy efficiency among businesses and households under something called the Delaware Modernization Service and Sustainable Energy Utility. Then that created a huge growth in demand for energy auditors, building inspectors, a whole range of goods and services, which then led to the Delaware Green Talent Initiative, having the Delaware Technical and Community Colleges, University of Delaware, and you know the whole infrastructure of education and workforce training and development to get into play, so that the growing demand would then generate opportunities for people, you know, for people, businesses, jobs, and incomes locally. And then the third piece was the trying to develop the key industries of the future related to all this. So we have marine energy, which is not only offshore wind but wave and tidal. We now have a state-of-the-art offshore, what's right on the land, but, you know, wind turbine from Gamesa as part of a research facility of University of Delaware. We have electric vehicle-to-grid conversion, and that helped attract a electric automaker. So we've got ecotourism, green financial services, sustainable agriculture. I can show you a chicken coop with solar panels on it, and so on and so forth. I may be missing a few things, but the life sciences, and that was the one where, you know, DuPont itself has switched, in order to save money, from petroleum-based, you know, chemical products to biological-based feedstocks. And in the process, they came up with products more eco-friendly and cheaper to make. And, you know, the market share revenues went up, the profits went up. So life sciences, so that's... I don't know if that was...
Yeah, it's a great example, Mark.
Was that a good example?
It's tangible. I know we're down to the last probably minute here or so on the show here, but what I'm hearing is this green savings, green opportunity, green talent can be applied at the very sort of on-the-dance-floor, local community subdivision level when you begin to look at what can be pulled, what can be demonstrated, but it can be taken up to the state level, can be taken up to the county, can be taken up to the city level, where there's really more of a plan, a thought process, a strategy developed for how to address these three, how to pull them together, and how to engage the communities. So I think we've only got about 20 or 30 seconds here left, Mark. Very short, but final thought on this. What makes it all work?
People's vision and heart. Their enthusiasm, their caring for their own livelihood and well-being of themselves and their loved ones, and the larger community that supports that.
Oh, Mark, I couldn't appreciate it. I couldn't put the words together better myself. Great to have you on here today. I've got to extend the invitation. We've got to have a part two with you here coming up. But, Mark, great to get this conversation going with you. Thanks so much for being on Zoom today.
Thank you. I'll be honored to be back.
Okay, good enough. Listeners, that's part of our conversation, green savings, green opportunity, green talent, three-legged stool puts together. We bring our own mind, our own vision, our own heart and soul to the table at this, as Mark is describing so well. That's part of our conversation, out to the big picture, into the up close and personal. Make it personal, make it rich, make it come alive. We make it happen. Come back next week. We continue the conversation on this, out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, all toward a world of desirable futures. Come back again. Thanks. Have a great week.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. And have a terrific week.